Yeah, but this is the way how we look at recruitment. It's super crazy. Everyone needs to be the perfect package. But we also know from ourselves that we learn a ton every year, which is weird, right?
My name is Katharina, and I'm the Community and Event Manager at eCulture, a company that is on a mission to shape the world of unbiased hiring. Welcome to the Oops, I'm Biased podcast. On today's episode of the Oops, I Am Biased podcast, I am bringing you a talk by Tony de Graaf about hiring for skills and competencies. Tony de Graaf is Global Director of Hiring Success at Smart Recruiters. He's a keynote speaker, expert on all things hiring success. And he spoke at the Breaking Bias Summit about the topic of hiring for skills and competencies. And we are bringing his talk to the podcast today. So if you attended the Breaking Bias Summit, this is your chance to listen back. If you didn't, you do not need to miss out any longer. You will get his session audio only on the podcast exclusively. He will talk about what hiring for skills and competencies actually is, why we should care about it, why it is important now in the labor market of today, and what you can do today to get started with shifting towards hiring for skills and competencies. Lots of practical tips, best practices, and advice from Tony de Graaf. So without further ado, I really hope you enjoy this episode.
So hello, I'm Tony de Graaf. Yeah, really Dutch last name, I know. I am also Dutch, but I live in Berlin, Germany. I lived there now for 3.5 years, and I work for Smart Recruiters as indeed the Global Director of Hiring Success. I work for an American company, so they all have very sexy position titles, so I got myself one as well, and no one knows what I'm doing. So what I do, I head up our global strategy consulting practice, so which means that I myself and the consultants in the team, we work with recruitment teams around the world and help them improve their TA practices. And this can be smaller assignments like, hey, we want to implement the referral program. Can you help us? Or we want to really start building talent communities. Can you help us? All the way to the larger projects where we have organizations that say, hey, we want to drive a full talent acquisition transformation and we want to do continuous improvement. Can you help us build the business case and the strategy and the roadmap? And then we work with some companies already for years to help them improve. So that's what we do. But Smart Recruiters itself, we are a ATS hiring platform. I won't show anything of that today because everyone knows how an ATS works and it's just boring. So I'm not going to do that. But I'm going to take a piece of the work that we do, specifically how to optimize the hiring process in a way that we can not fully eliminate bias, but at least control it and become better at it, right? There is not a silver bullet. So how I want to approach the topic today, first, I want to briefly say what is hiring for skills and competencies. I think everyone has an idea. I do want to share my definition of it, so at least we all are in the same mindset when we talk about it. Then why you should care about the topic. The second point, why is it so important to care about this right now? Why is it so pressing for us that we really, really need to do something with this? Then three, I want to share a whole person assessment strategy. That is what we use when we build hiring processes for organizations. So that is what best practice looks like. So this is probably way too big and too complex to start implement quickly. With some organizations, it is a process of 2 years to fully get there. But I do want to give this to you as food for thought. And then as last, I do have some points on where to start. I always like to end talks with, okay, what are things that you all can start implementing and doing tomorrow that don't require projects, that don't require budget, but do have high impact? So let's go. So hiring for skills, hiring employees based on transferable skills or competencies, or the candidate's ability to actually learn them or develop them on the job. So we're not specifically just looking on, okay, skills and competencies, does he or she have the right package? Or is there also an opportunity for people that they can actually learn it fast enough on the job? That's hiring for skills and competencies for me. And why? Well, you have, there are multiple reasons, but these for me are the most important. You will have deeper talent pools. You will hire and discover more candidates within your normal application base. If you don't change anything, it's literally looking differently at all those resumes. And you will see that you will pull in different candidates into the hiring process that you normally would not have done if you have not fully implemented hiring for skills and competencies. And this will lead automatically to more diverse candidates in that pipeline. Because yes, if I have 100 applicants and I look at which I want to interview, and some maybe have five that have exactly done the job at your competitor, yes, please still put them into your pipeline. You're shooting yourself in the foot if you don't. But it's more around, okay, we have these five candidates, but can we have one, two, or maybe three more candidates that we normally would not have invited, or that we now have a different lens that we look at? You also pull them into your interview process. And now you have a chance of 1 in 7 in 1 or 8 to make a hire instead of 1 in 5. And that goes on in the higher numbers and the multiplier. And that will lead to something called your increased hiring velocity. And hiring velocity is your ability to deliver talent on time when the business needs it. Because it is proven by research of McKinsey, of organizations that really only do competency and skills-based hiring, they are drastically faster, because that goes back to the deeper talent pools. If every job, I don't interview 4 or 5, but I always pull 6 or 7 into that pipeline because I look different at it. In the larger numbers and over time, you will see that you will become faster. Why should we care about it right now? Right? We see, and it's not specifically CEOs, but we already see this with some of our customers, the first point. So that the shortage of actual people, so the shortage of specific skills, will have an effect on organizations where they're actually able to achieve their business strategy. We're already working with customers that have had to make changes in their plans and their targets because they simply cannot hire the people or find the people. So that means that the organization can't achieve their targets if they can't find the right people. And that's only going to get worse over the next decade or 15 years or so, right? So the second one, again, based on another research from the Fast Company, is that you're 60% more likely to make a hire from the same talent community if you do competency and skills-based hiring. So again, if you don't change anything, you just stick to your applications that you have right now, you're 60% more likely to fill the job versus just doing resume-based hiring. And the last one is that if you talk to hiring managers, they say that their ATS and their current processes don't really help them to hire for skills and competencies. And that's up to us to actually do something about that. But hiring for skills is not the holy grail. It's not a silver bullet, right? For me, breaking the bias, just use that example, is an entire chain, right? And every individual checkle you need to fix, right? Because if we have a perfectly career site and we explain on there what who we are, and is a proper reflection of who we are really in the organization and how we are inclusive and all that good stuff, somebody will apply. Amazing. But if we don't change the way that we actually screen our resumes, it all falls apart, because we only pull in those five that have the right company, the right job title, and the right experience level, and we only hire them. So one checkle breaks, the entire chain breaks. Even if you do that perfectly and we have a nice diverse slate of candidate that goes to the hiring manager, but the hiring manager just hires on gut feeling or says, I make a decision within 10 seconds or hire somebody or not. We've all been there as recruiters, and that is unfortunately true that it sometimes happens. So one chain breaks, the entire chain is, or one checkle breaks, the entire chain breaks. And it even goes, if we do everything perfectly, skills and competency-based hiring, we take our hiring decisions based on data and everything, and we hire maybe a mother with 2 or 3 children that wants to work from home, and we even have policies for that, perfect. But then we have an onboarding process that demands that somebody is on site for 2 weeks. Yes, it happens. I have those examples. I won't name names, but it actually happens, right? So you need to always, anything we hear here today, nothing is a silver bullet. We need to look at the chain. We have to, every individual checker we need to fix. Hiring for skills and competencies can fix that mid-funnel piece, from how we do our selections until how we take the hiring decision. But also hiring for skills is, this is a misconception I have had, a conversation I have with multiple customers as well. They think that hiring for skills and competencies replaces your entire hiring process. That's the only thing we'll do. No. You need to have a hiring process, but hiring for skills and competencies is a part of your whole approach, how you assess a person. And that's that whole whole person assessment strategy I will show you in a moment, right? Because if you can only hire for skills, that doesn't work. A small example, if somebody wants, you want to hire an email marketer and you have on the resume, somebody had a good profile and good skills and competencies, you assess that you hire that person. But you actually know that that person is leaving the job because they want to do something more and more responsibility. But you actually know that your job can't really offer that because it's just the same job, but at the competitor. So if we just hire for skills and competency, we don't talk about that. So we also need to understand the interest of the person. What are they looking for in a new job? How does that fit in their career path? What we can actually offer, et cetera. It has nothing to do with skills and competencies. So there is a little bit more to it. And you have to look at every step in the process. You need to take a specific lens to skills. So we'll get back to that and explain it a little bit more. So first, the process. If a new job, in my experience, if I work with recruitment teams, if I noticed that I didn't even start at the beginning explaining a little bit about my history, but I'm a recruiter. Normally I am working in a head of recruitment role. My previous role was head of talent of Wehkamp, for example, a company here in the Netherlands. And with my recruiters, I always told them, if a new role opens, you can't directly post that role. You have to talk to the hiring manager. And then even some recruiters say to me, yeah, but they are, the email marketing team already hired 6 last year, so I know what they're looking for. I said, no, you don't. I'm sorry. Because if you leave, you have a different set of skills and competencies that you will take with you than you. So you need to go to that hiring manager and ask, what are the skills and competencies that she leaves that we need to replace? And if we now zoom out, we have an empty chair. What skills and competencies versus your entire team would you like to add and amplify? The profile is the same. The level is the same. Everything is almost the same. But these two questions will never have the same answer. And if you don't have those skills and competencies, what are you going to write in the job ad? And we hire on skills and competencies. We talk to our hiring manager. And then in our job ad, it says 10 years of experience and a master degree. No, take it out. Anyone who has that in their job ads, take it out, because it has nothing to do. There was absolutely no correlation between the years of working experience and the education level or somebody's going to be successful in the role. But we don't know what to put on those bullet points. That's because we don't talk to our hiring managers what the skills and competencies are that make somebody successful in the role, or what you are taking with you when you're leaving, etc. If you have that conversation, you have actually content to put there. Sounds super simple, but it is. Talk to your hiring managers. Because finally, if you're going to, before I go to the assessment, if I have 100 applicants, I haven't talked to my hiring manager, what am I going to look at? Based on what, I'm going to select those 5. If I have not talked to you as my hiring manager, I can look at education level, experience, job titles, company titles, and I am making the same mistake again. I'm then the first checker that directly breaks. So you need to have that conversation. And last, always find a way to start to objectify some of the data that you take a hiring decision on. I am not a fan of doing all types of assessments and make it very heavy in the process, but something. Because if you want to educate your hiring managers about they need to look different and on recruitment and how they take hiring decisions, it becomes very fast your opinion versus my opinion. And assessments will help you in that conversation to make it a little bit more objective, something that's on the side, to actually have that conversation. So start somewhere. And again, so it's not a complete overhaul of the hiring process. You just have to look at a few areas where you can start implementing it. And this is just the start of the process. Super simple, high impact. This is a whole person assessment strategy. There is some internal needs going on, company needs, business unit needs, team needs. There is an ability assessment that we have from the actual candidate, and that interest piece that I talked about. Hiring for skills and competencies, only in these 5. That's where they actually apply. Just to paint the picture a little bit. It's a very important piece of it and the core of it, but just hiring for skills and competencies is not enough, right? That example that I just gave, if somebody's a perfect match, but what that person is looking for in their career is not a match what we can offer, we can make the hire, but we know that role is going to be back on our desk in 6 months to a year. I don't want that. But there are a few layers of the onion that we need to add to it. So there are 4 areas. So first, progressive candidate profiling. These two are together as assessments. These two are also together in terms of interviewing and doing the selection. and the collaborative approach. And I want to say something about that. Progressive candidate profiling. A large-ass customer I work with, everybody knows their name. I'm not going to tell their name. They have a, and it's for blue-collar work. It's like operational hires. Their application process on the website, it took me 55 minutes. And I just sometimes just click forward. So if you want to do a proper 1 hour and 15 minutes, they do this globally. It's insane. It's truly insane. They do like IQ, EQ testing, psychometric testing, how you collaborate and how you are in the workplace. All very interesting information, but you don't need all that information at the application. If you all want to do a operation, an assessment kind of thing, an interview two, you give the assessment an interview two. You not ask everyone to take the assessment before interview one, but you don't even discuss it in interview one. It's not very respectful for the time of the candidate as well. And you're gathering data that you not do anything with. So take all the steps in your hiring process. If you don't need that at that moment, it can be very interesting, but don't ask it at that moment. Again, the second one, psychometric testing and capability skills test. There are a million types of tests of assessments out there. And don't do everything. Start small. Have something, right? That's around that. How can I? So those are the second and the third layer. So this is more behavioral and this is more skills and competency based. So this is more around making sure that you objectify some of that data in the hiring process that actually helps take the hiring decision. And why do I keep hammering on that? Because at the end of the day, if I'm a hiring manager, I just stick to the email performance marketing team. I'm the manager. I already do this job for 15 years. I know how to hire. And now somebody else comes in and says, yeah, you kind of don't. Here is a scorecard, here's structured interviewing, and I'm going to tell you how to take a hiring decision. No. And even if that hiring manager says yes to that, an average recruitment team has probably 200 to 500 hiring managers if you're a little bit a good organization, right? And the larger organizations that we work with, they have 25,000 hiring managers or something like that. You can't educate them one by one, right? So you need to find a way to objectify that data, because else you're gonna die in the trenches trying to convince everyone, right? And then you have that one hiring manager that only makes one hire a year, and a year later he completely forgot what you told him, right? So you need to have a structure in place there. And this one is the most important, because we can't blame hiring managers for having this approach, or hire by gut feeling, or tell me a little bit about yourself, which is just an hour talking through the resume, right? It happens a lot. So, but we are the ones who are actually responsible for that, in HR and TA, to structure that. Because if we don't want that shackle in the chain to break, we need to tell the hiring managers how to do that. Structured interviewing and scorecards is the way to do it. You have to give them a certain structure on how to assess the talent. There's no other way to do it. And I don't care how you call it, I don't care how you do it, or how complex or how simple, you need to find a way. It's your job to make sure they assess talent the way that you want it. And then the last one, a collaborative approach, right? That is kind of the red thread through the entire thing. We as recruiters or in HR helping the business hire people, we are not operational and order takers. It is our job to influence the hiring manager so that they take the right hiring decision. So you're a talent advisor. And with that mindset, you also need to show up. And if you get a job and you're directly posted and you don't talk to your hiring manager, I'm sorry, you're an order taker. Because you literally take an order. You always go to your hiring manager, and it can be a conversation of 3 minutes, even just walking down. What was she really good at? Just picking on you again as the example. What is she leaving? What do you worry about? And what else do we want to add to your team? You made a few hires. Or another great question is, you made 6 hires. Which one of those is the best hire and why? What does this person do differently? Because I want to hire another one of those. It can be a 3-minute conversation. And then you don't need projects for that or intake forms or all the complex stuff. No, just talk to your recruiters, talk to your hiring managers. Keep it simple, right? Because if you do like super complex intake forms, a hiring manager never done this, and now they have a meeting on the books and you're coming in with a form and you start to, you encounter a lot of resistance, right? Keep it light. So, okay, now what? This is the think big. This is what best practice could look like and a few of the aspects that you can start to look at. But again, this is a 2-year project. that is fully backed up and financed and everyone is committed to. It's not something we can do in one day. So what are things that you can start doing tomorrow that are for free? I already named all of them, right? Get your recruiters to talk to your hiring managers. Simple as that. We need to understand that at the end of the day, we don't do interviews because we do interviews. We don't do two interviews and an assessment because we always do that. There's only one reason why we do that. We want to take the hiring decision, a hiring decision. Everything you do should facilitate the hiring decision. So also if you don't really know how the hiring decision really gets taken, that is maybe also a very good conversation or an interesting internal project to actually have. What is a hiring decision? Who is actually there? And based on what do we take the hiring decision? And does our interview actually give us the data to actually take that hiring decision? Often the answer is, we don't exactly know. And this is fine because stuff just grew and that's how it is. Check your job ads. That's something you can do today. Everything that's around that experience, those bullet points and the requirements that are not skills and competency based or do not describe things that actually make somebody successful in the role. The fact that somebody doesn't have a master degree has shit to do whether somebody is successful or not. I hired an HR administrative person without specific education in that field as a campus recruiter because she wanted to do something in recruitment, no experience in recruitment. She's done the job for 4 years. In January, she landed the global head of TA role at Excel Bikes. If you're passionate about it, recruitment, let's be honest, do we really need a master degree to be a recruiter? I don't have one. We don't, right? It's about different things. It's skills, competencies, passion. Why does somebody want to do this? So make sure that is reflected in your job ads. Scorecards. If you want to start with scorecards, highly recommend you do. Don't overcomplicate it. A lot of organizations I work with directly want to go into a situation where they create an entire skills and competency matrix and leveling and I, as a recruiter, don't even want to use that shit, right? So start simple. You can have two scorecards and they're the same on all your jobs. Functional fit and cultural fit. And the cultural fit, you describe some example questions on how to actually, that is being measured. The functional fit, just keep it empty. Because if you realize what you're doing, you're not introducing scorecards, you're changing the way that the hiring manager has always interviewed and hired. That is what you're doing. So you have to keep it light. And they can still do their interview, but now they have to give feedback. Instead, I want her. And now they need to explain why, in terms of the functional fit, why I think you're good at the job and why I think you're a good fit for the team or the organization. That's a first step. At Vacamp, I did this and it took almost 1.5 years before we took the next step. Because hiring managers need to get used to this because you're introducing something they've never done before. So just two scorecards on all of them. And some hiring managers will not fill it out because they will hate it. So. There will be ones that will do that. And you will find the type of the team in your organization. We, for us at Vacamp, was the product team because the leader of the product team was ex-McKinsey. So it was very skills and competency based. And he's like, I want more. So that was the first team where we actually started to do the skills and competencies per job and starting to add them and actually use them into the interview because that leader and the leaders under him actually wanted it. Road of least resistance. So if you start with those two scorecards on all those jobs, you will notice maybe the finance team is like, what are you doing? Go away. And maybe the marketing team where you maybe did not directly expect it is like, yeah, this is interesting. Can we talk more about this? Road of least resistance. You can't change the entire organization in one go anyway. And resume reviewing. Talk to your recruiters, get your recruiters together. I've stepped in this pitfall multiple times as well because of pressure and time and when you're actually screening and reviewing. What we actually tend to do is that we look for the things that are missing. Oh, doesn't have this, gone. Doesn't have this, gone. Tuck, 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 tuck. Because we have to screen to a million candidates, right? So try and change the mindset. Somebody applied for a reason. What is the reason that this person applied? Can I see the fit? That small difference, and you can still go through it. It doesn't mean that you will still spend more than 15 seconds looking at every application if you go through the 100. We know how it goes. But literally that small change in mindset, I will bet you all, you can call me and reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'll give you a bottle of wine. If it doesn't happen, you will find more candidates interesting. And you will find that one, two extra candidates of the five, so five, and then now you maybe have seven that you can interview. Because you just look in those 15 seconds or a minute, however long you're taking to look at it, with a slightly different mindset. Cost you nothing, but we sometimes do need to be reminded of this. And that's it. We have this model. We have an ebook on it. It's for free, so you can download it. And that's it. So thank you. Anyone has a question?
Yeah. So if I look at my organization, kind of hitting all the points, but where I'm struggling right now with new hiring, well, interviewers or hiring team members, right?
Yeah.
Is level of development of skills. Like mm-hmm. I'm hiring mostly for engineering.
Yeah.
And there can be very black or white. So mm-hmm. missing one thing, couldn't answer one thing in the technical interview, life coding interview, whatever. I don't think it's going to work. Not senior enough, you know, like missing yeah. something, not looking at the holistic person. And that's something that we're struggling with. Do yeah. you have any suggestions?
I don't have an answer. I have a question back for that interviewer. So did you have this when you started working here? Oh, and he said, or are you still exactly the same the day we hired you? It's a nice way to call bullshit, actually, right? It's yeah, that you don't have it. That is usually a confronting question. I said, but can't they learn it? I said, specifically for engineering and development roles, those people are learning every day. The languages and the frameworks and everything they're using today, maybe 30% didn't even exist 5 years ago. So I don't think it's an existing problem, I would kindly suggest. And then see what happens. Hopefully this helps. Yeah. yeah. And it's always, but it's about this conversation and talking. And sometimes you get somewhere, sometimes not always, but it's this way of thinking. I always play it back because everyone here, are you exactly the same the day you started? You have learned nothing? And so like, yeah, I did. But no, right? It's the way how we look at recruitment. It's super crazy. Everyone needs to be the perfect package. But we also know from ourselves that we learn a ton every year, which is weird, right? Any other questions?
So after Corona, we started to work differently, right? Mm-hmm. More from home. Do you see any impact on skills and competences that we may need to look for more?
Oh, good question. I think this is a very individual question per company, and even because if I work with production companies where people work a lot in factories, that is a completely different ask than for example if you work for the Deloittes of this world, right? They still demand more than they maybe should to come into the office actually, versus than actually is needed. So it's very very individual. Maybe not so much skills and competencies. What I notice in our organizations, we have a lot of people who work in a remote first company for the first time. We were already before COVID. And it's for me, it's more around if that interest piece, this one, doesn't fully connect to the person or right. So we can't really deliver on that promise what you want. You see that the relationship and the commitment and engagement deteriorates faster than if that is okay. So for me, I would maybe not change something specifically in here, but make sure that we match the interest properly because we can't feel alone sometimes working remote, right? One more, is that okay?
Yeah,
accepted by the time manager. There we go.
Quick question for me. So say you're hiring for a recruitment director, 10 years experience, managing through managers, all that kind of stuff. How would you reframe the conversation to be about skills and competencies and try and get rid of those things in the JD?
My question would be, what is that TA director going to do?
Manage managers.
Yeah.
Strategy?
Yeah, but it's around what is the, because the TA director role can be very different, right? Is this something somebody needs to manage the status quo? So we just need to make sure we hit our targets? Or are we in a declining phase where we need to restructure the team so that everybody has work and maybe some people need to go? Or are we having, or do we have a question where the growth is going to be extreme? Those are three completely different skill set in those roles, right? So that would be the type of question I would have, the type of conversation I would have. What does the person need to do? The same, some organizations, they're more old school and they kind of want to stay the same. But some organizations, I was in Düsseldorf with Metro. Metro AG is the mother company of Makro, like a big retailer. They're very old school and they know it. And they kind of laugh about it as well. But their new global TA leader is there because they want to change. So he is literally evangelizing and driving a transformation, right? And that's a completely different skill set than some other TA directors I spoke to. And again, everything in this conversation, did you hear anything with organizational or education level, 10 years of experience? I'd rather have somebody with 5 years of experience driving transformational projects than somebody with 15 years of experience, but just manage the status quo if any actual change need to happen. So again, it's about that that communication. Don't take that as an answer. I wouldn't. Because if that's the answer, said, here are the keys to my LinkedIn. Good luck. You can find the 10 years plus experienced TA directors, but that's not where our added value is. It's in this type of conversations. Does it make sense?
Yeah, it does. I was thinking about it for another. I just wanted to use TA as an example.
But yeah, sure. But yeah. In any world, what is the goal? What is that person going to do? What does success look like? Exactly the same roles. I will be not successful or happy, at least, in an organization where they're very operational, KPI-driven. As a TA director, I never, ever looked at how many phone calls, how many interviews, how many hiring my recruiters made. Never. And they're all TA directors now. Never. Because that's not what the success of people is. It's around, do you build good relationship with your hiring managers? If you're passionate about your job, you'll manage your own KPIs. I can trust that. But it's my job to make you feel passionate. It's my job that you feel safe and want to spread your wings, make a mistake or two. Well, we'll fix it. Yeah? I could talk about this stuff for hours. I need to shut up. Okay, that's it. Thank you.